Silence stretched and took a long sniff of the wind that was coming up from the valley, clearing out the smell of men and metal accumulated over hours spent in a flying machine. Despite being forced to sit still over the long trip, she was glad to discover that she could no longer feel any discomfort where the arrow had pierced her neck. The flying machine sat down at the same place that the evil one, with the beaked-nosed man and the local man who smelled wrong, had landed. Silence walked slowly around the clearing, checking the scents and examining the faint footprints of those men and their machine, seeing no evidence they had been back. As Silence stopped to look again across the valley, the sun finally appeared above the mountains behind her, warming her back and lighting up a distant craggy peak to the west. She wanted to get going. She was to lead Red and the girl, Mei Lin Yu, along the canyon path to where she last saw the evil one and his companions. Silence was gratified that the girl felt the same way about the evil one, that he was out to hurt New Eden, or Thera, as the people who were here before called their home. A hard and brave thing, Silence thought, to accept that about one's brother. She was also pleased that Red finally agreed to work with the old grandfather and the girl to protect Thera from the evil one. Using her tracking skills to find traces of this man and those he commanded was something she could do easily, and she didn't understand why Red had been so hesitant to help. Silly boy. The evil one threatened their own peace, just as he threatened the peace of the girl and her people. Combining their prides for the sake of the hunt made sense. In return, in 7 sunrises, she and Red would be able to head for home. I watched as the snowcat Silence turned to look out over the Gunfrinosh Valley towards Dayang Peak, and I didn't need my telepathic abilities to tell how pleased the hybrid cat was to be here. The word home filled the big cat's mind, reinforcing my belief that Jackson and his team's base camp was more than a temporary shelter, and that it was located somewhere in this valley or on that peak. I needed to get Jackson to admit this to me so we could move forward in building trust between us, whether he liked it or not. If he and his people lived in this region, they were under the authority of my great-grandmother, because Henine, as the native Therans called her, ruled the entire western province of Kylestes. In addition, as Henine's heir, I was responsible for making sure that Jackson and his people did not pose a threat to the native Therans in the province. In time, I hoped he would come to believe I was looking out for him and those who followed him as well. I wasn't familiar with this far eastern section of the province or this specific valley, hidden away as it was on the opposite of the Menethira Mountains from Monmouthamora, my ancestral home above the Sapphire Sea. Nevertheless, only a week ago, I'd been only 80 kilometers to the southwest of this spot as the result of being kidnapped as I flew back from New Hong Kong to Monmouthamora. Seemed a lifetime had passed since then. First, there had been my trip to New Hong Kong with my grandfather and my disturbing altercation with my nasty older brother, Albert. Then there was the kidnapping itself. Next came my failed escape from my kidnappers, followed by the revelation that Jackson, one of my captors, was the same person as the young, red-haired Reacher boy I'd read about in my ancestor Mabel's diary. Something that should have been impossible, given that the last time Mabel saw Jackson McCaffrey, he'd been 12 years old, and that Mabel herself had died half a century ago at the age of 100. Impossible, because, despite these facts, Jackson was now only 31. But it wasn't impossible, because the SS Challenge, the interstellar ship Jackson traveled on from Earth, the ship that was supposed to arrive here in New Eden shortly after the Founder's 10 ships, had been thrown forward in time 150 years.